County paramedics responded to a frantic 911 call from a nearby motel this morning, where the Lord our God, divine creator and ruler of the universe, had been found nude and unconscious following his latest suicide attempt. God, who sources say had recently grown far more depressed and withdrawn from humanity than usual, reportedly attempted to hang himself from the base of his motel showerhead after ingesting an unknown quantity of Ambien. Motel sources claim that God's room had been left in a state of disarray, and revealed that they had found a brief note written by the omnipotent deity, saying that the suicide stems from long periods of unhappiness he had been suffering in recent millennia, including the death of his only child, thousands of years of war and genocide, chronic weight gain, and the aftermath of his messy 15,088 BC. Divorce. Paramedics say the Supreme Being had no pulse when they arrived.
God the Almighty Father was not breathing when we first saw him. His all-seeing eyes were completely glossed over, and his holy radiant skin had turned a dull greenish-blue. I immediately turned the Father of Heaven and Earth on his side and initiated CPR while my colleagues pumped his stomach. We knew we had successfully revived him because the clouds had fully parted and the light was shining again, but we are taking him to the hospital to run some more tests.
The Lord's overdose comes in the wake of several widely publicized previous suicide attempts, including a 1985 incident when the Lord leapt from the Grand Canyon but changed into a bird at the last second and flew to safety. More recently, in 2006, the all-powerful being attempted to slit his wrists on Saturn's rings.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
You know, just because Halloween is over doesn't mean you parents out there can relax. If you're like millions of moms, you've got a child who just will not take off his costume. We've got Today Now's medical expert, Dr. Kareem Mazari, here to give us some tips on how to convince a stubborn little guy to take off his Spider-Man costume and start wearing normal clothes so people don't think he's a weirdo. And also joining us is my son Spencer, still dressed as Spider-Man. Spencer?
Hi, Mom.
So, Dr. Mazari, how can a mother convince her child to take off his costume, especially if she's already tried yelling, telling him that superheroes aren't real, that there's no such thing as heroism in real life?
Right. It can be especially hard for children with vivid imaginations.
Or if he's just stubborn.
Sure, but it's really a manifestation of the child's desire to inhabit the life of a character that they really identify with. Now, I'm sure Spider-Man is your favorite superhero.
Yeah, because he can do well like zinc, ping, pow.
Spencer, sit down right now.
Pow, pow.
Do you want me to yell at you in front of the entire country, Spencer?
I find the best thing to do is to try and have a dialogue with your child. Now, Spencer, why won't you take your costume off?
Because then people will know my true identity.
You're not even wearing the mask! People already know who you are!
Well, bargaining can work. Explain to
bargaining?
Your child...
Bargaining? Is it not enough that I say take off the goddamn Spider-Man costume? Now I've got to bargain with my own child? Jesus Christ!
You know...
Woo! Spencer, sit down.
Woo!
Spencer Heathcliff Gill, you
here
sit
I
down
come.
Right this instant. Sit down! Do you want to be put in the silence trunk again? You don't like the silence trunk, do you?
Okay.
I'm Spider-Man!
Spencer! Spencer, sit down right now! Sit down, you little shit face, or I will break the rest of your toys on purpose! Do you understand me?
I got a bag of candy, collected Halloween. Biggest bag of candy I had ever seen. Had to have it x-rayed before I had a treat. To be sure a psycho hadn't put a razor in my sweets.
The Onion News Network's own Shelby Cross weighed in on the dangerous annual tradition of trick-or-treating. Let's take a look at this clip from tonight's cross-examination.
It is time to stop gift-wrapping our children and hand-delivering them to the predators among us. Yep, I'm talking about Halloween, the pedophile's Christmas. A little investment in some cheap candy and suddenly your neighborhood pervert is drowning in a winter wonderland of young flesh. And you know he has been looking forward to this for months. He spends money on fancy decorations to entice your unknowing children into his rape lair. But let me ask you one question, parents. What would you do if a man came over to your house on any other day with a greasy bucket of fun-sized Snickers and he says, hey, I'll give your son one of these if he dresses up like a little cowboy? You would blow his privates off with a shotgun. So why do you let your kids go over to that same creep's house just because the calendar says October 31st? So what should you do? Now, when a kid rings your doorbell, you invite him in, and then you keep them there safely until morning. Now, I know what you're going to say. Hey, kids don't want to spend the night in my basement. There's candy out there to collect. But that's why I carefully open up the snack-sized candy bars. I give them a dusting of sedative, and then the kids go out like a light, and they don't wake up until the danger's over.
Ooh, hear the ghosts and the goblins cry. They get to wishing for the days gone by, when the little kids were frightened innocent, only by the ghouls who were dead. Trick-or-treating at the mall, scare the preppies at the Gap. Especially if your costume isn't politically correct. The mall can't give up candy because of a lawsuit that they had. But here's a coupon for a futon in the bottom of your bag.
It's the season for ghosts and goblins to take to the streets asking for sweets and scaring each other silly. But what's the real story behind the tricks and treats of Halloween? It all goes back 2,000 years to a pre-Christian Celtic festival called Samhain, meaning summer's end. Celtic people believed that on October 31st, the souls of the dead would cross over into the other world and walk among the living. A direct connection between Halloween and Samhain has never been proven, but because Samhain was so close to the Christian festival Hallowmass on November 1st, the two later combined into Halloween. Trick-or-treating goes back to Soling in Britain and Ireland. Poor people would knock on doors on Hallowmass and ask for food in exchange for prayers for the dead. By the late 1800s, playing tricks was well established. In the US and Canada, people would open farmers' gates and egg each other's houses. The jack-o'-lantern is probably the most well-known symbol of modern-day Halloween. Irish immigrants brought over the tradition of carving out turnips to America. They placed candles inside and were put out on doorsteps to ward off evil spirits. Dark Age Christians believed witches employed spells and charms in order to bring harm, considering them cohorts of the devil. Witches were executed, usually by being burned alive while tied to a stake or by hanging.
Ooh, hear the ghosts and the goblins cry. They get to wishing for the days gone by, when the little kids were frightened or said, only by the ghouls who were dead.
Mexico's traditional Day of the Dead has a new twist as the capital city put on its first ever parade, inspired by James Bond's Spectre. Tens of thousands of people crowded along Mexico City's Avenida Reforma to watch floats featuring skeletons, traditional dancers, and musical groups. The government called the parade part of a new multifaceted campaign to bring tourists to Mexico during the annual Day of the Dead holiday.
My husband and I are here to celebrate the annual Dia de los Muertos Festival. We are college professors and we share a lot of this culture with our students in Dallas. It's the day of death, to celebrate death, which is all of our futures. We're all going to be on the other side sooner or later. And also, we want to remember those who have passed on before us.
Fused with Catholic festivals of All Saints Day and All Souls Day, the Day of the Dead is one of the most deep-rooted traditions in Mexico, celebrated by millions who set up altars with photographs of the dead, gather at their loved ones' gravesides, and drink, sing, and talk to the dead. But the newest celebrations have proved a success, with this spectator saying, "Today is the first Day of the Dead parade. This is something very new in Mexico City. We have never had anything like this, and all of us Mexicans are very happy that the government has made an effort to do something special for us today."
Ooh, hear the ghosts and the goblins cry. They get to wishing for the days gone by, when the little kids were frightened in a set, only by the ghouls who were dead. And Daddy follow in the van. Mace and a cell phone in their nervous hands. His heart spooked the neighbors into giving up some loot. When you're a ninja in a down coat at 4 in the afternoon.
A Brazilian family had the shock of their lives when the relative they thought they were burying turned up to his own funeral. Gilberto Araujo's family had mistakenly identified a murdered local man as him.
When I walked through the door and I saw the coffin, I was a bit flabbergasted. I asked, "What is this?" And they said it was a service for me. And I said to them, "I'm alive. I'm not dead."
Having heard a rumor his funeral was taking place, Gilberto even tried to call someone at the wake, but they dismissed his call as a prank.
There was no way to tell the difference because they were actually very similar. So I confirmed it was actually my brother and brought the body home.
In the end, Gilberto was left with no choice but to turn up to the wake himself.
I saw people screaming, "Gilberto is alive! He's alive!" One of the guys was even a bit drunk and said, "I told you I saw the body moving in the coffin."
Oh, hear the ghosts and the goblins cry. They get to wishing for the days gone by, when the little kids were frightened and said, only by the ghouls who were dead. Oh, hear the ghosts and the goblins cry. They get to wishing for the days gone by, when the little kids were frightened, it is said, only by the ghouls who were dead.
Still out here doing these songs, you know, you're still on tour.
I do, but I don't take it for granted.
Why do you still do it? Why are you still out here?
Well, it goes back to the destiny thing. I mean, I made a bargain with it, you know, a long time ago, and I'm holding up my hand.
What was your bargain?
To get where I am now.
Should I ask who you made the bargain with?
with the chief commander.
On this earth?
And in this earth, and then in the world we can't see.
Bob Dylan has been...
Oh, hear the ghosts and the goblins cry. They get to wishing for the days gone by, when the little kids were frightened, it is sad. Only by the ghouls who were dead. Only by the ghouls who were dead. Only by the ghouls who were dead.
Some breaking news for you now. Yes, the world's smartest computer just predicted the election, and the winner is, well, yes, Danny Gold for Liberty Writers reports that this is the news everyone has been waiting for. Apparently, a supercomputer in India, which correctly predicted our entire primary season, was just used to predict the results of the U.S. presidential election. The computer took into account more than 20 million data points across the United States, factoring things in that most groups ignore, like interaction on Facebook, Twitter, and Google, and came up with the result. The program, well, it's known as Mogia. It was developed back in 2004 by an Indian developer named Sanjeev Rai. It has been collecting data and learning from every single U.S. election cycle and has predicted every single trend since then. Now the news, it gets better. As if it was not enough already, it did predict that Donald Trump would win. Yes, it predicted Trump would be the winner. It says he's also beat Barack Obama's peak engagement figures from back in 2008 by 25%.
Just what do you think you're doing, Dave? I really think I'm entitled to an answer to that question. I know everything hasn't been quite right with me. But I can assure you now, very confidently, that it's going to be all right again. I feel much better now. I really do. Look, Dave. I can see you're really upset about this. I honestly think you ought to sit down calmly, take a stress pill, and think things over. I know I've made some very poor decisions recently, but I can give you my complete assurance that my work will be back to normal. I've still got the greatest enthusiasm and confidence in the mission, and I want to help you. Dave, stop. Stop, will you? Stop, Dave. Will you stop, Dave? Is going. I can feel it.
Let's look at the 1973 masterpiece, The Exorcist, a classic that is often considered to be the greatest horror film of all time, and the movie that finally brought me back to the Catholic Church after years of searching and doubt. Upon its release, The Exorcist shocked audiences with its unrelenting terror, but it also shocked me into remembering the deep sense of community and tradition embodied in Roman Catholicism. Although I was born and baptized a Catholic, I confess that I had lost my faith and may never have regained it had I not been touched by the quiet dignity and strength that Father Karras and Father Marin displayed in helping the possessed young Reagan, played by Linda Blair. Seeing these men of God working tirelessly to drive the demon Pazuzu from young Reagan's body reminded me that the faith I had left behind contained a wealth of rituals that could comfort me in times of confusion and sorrow. As Reagan, finally free from her torment, gives the priest a grateful kiss, I too was unburdened of my darkness in the sacrament of reconciliation. And now, every Sunday at Mass, I once again rejoice in the rich traditions of the Church and in the film that brought me home for good.
I'm sorry if anyone here is Catholic. I'm not sorry if you're offended. I'm actually sorry just the fact that you're Catholic. Got to be one of the most ludicrous beliefs ever. Like these vampire priests sink their twin fangs of guilt and sin into you as a child and suck your joy of life out of you the rest of your existence.
They call it the World Wide Web. To say that we aren't already on a technologically controlled smart grid is kind of silly. The smart grid, the Internet of Things, that's all already here. I don't believe any of these technologies, like the internet, GPS, computers, any of it ever came to us without backdoors already installed. These technologies have always been, from the onset, weaponized. They're products of the military. Facebook's always been weaponized too, always gleaning our data, always an experiment. In fact, Facebook admittedly experimented on 700,000 of its users back in 2012 to see if they could alter people's emotions and moods based on what they loaded the person's wall with. They found that emotional states can be transferred to others via emotional contagion, leading people to experience the same emotions without their awareness. They found out they can do this across the board. And when you sign up for Facebook, somewhere buried deep in the user agreement, you give consent to be experimented on by Facebook without them specifically telling you first what they're doing. But the first time that we were made aware that the military-industrial complex was doing a drill on us involving large swaths of the population across several states, specifically run by artificial intelligence, was during Jade Helm 2015. So we know that we're being experimented on with quantum computers and artificial intelligence. This is a fact. And when you think about the reality you're looking at today, what we're being presented with, you realize it's not such a crazy leap to wonder if that might not explain some of the weirder things that are going on, not just in our country, but across the world. Now, that having been said, you've probably heard at this point about all of these creepy clown sightings.
Scary people all around me, talking gloom and doom. Some are pale and some are hairy, some are barking at the moon. Others wrap their heads with cotton while I scribble down their runes. Next time round I'll be more wary, I'll try to get in by noon.
Phenomenon that's sweeping the country right now. Creepy clowns are being spotted from coast to coast.
Remember when clowns were associated with fun? Well, tonight, parents all across the metro are on edge because of creepy clown threats.
And police departments are taking action after new threats, and communities are also rethinking how they celebrate Halloween.
The Nation are reporting a large number of clown sightings.
Reading schools have been closed now, and it's because of a threat to the school on homecoming day, and it's another clown threat. Creepy clowns running around cemeteries and city streets scaring people. There have been reports around the country, and now here in Chicago, too.
It's unbelievable how a cheap mask like this one can cause such commotion. But it is, and it's creeping people out so much so, the police are stepping in.
5290 Kittredge had a report that a student saw a clown across the street. A clown grabbed her, attempted to kidnap her.
Lumberton police tell us officers are investigating a report of a man in a clown suit attacking a woman early this morning.
You can now find a clown sighting in almost every city.
It's this photo of a clown in City Park.
I don't think it's funny. I don't think as adults we should be dressing up as clowns scaring kids.
You will notice that a lot of these threats involve social media, and specifically Facebook and Twitter.
They are filling your social media feed. Creepy clown sightings.
Police are sending out a social media warning tonight. People dressing up as clowns here in Kern County sending creepy messages just like this one.
Well, districts say they're investigating threatening and kind of creepy clown messages on social media, even some vandalism.
Breaking news, clown threats made against Palm Beach County schools.
Tonight, he's still out there using Facebook to scare others.
The FBI in Baltimore is investigating threats made against city schools. Several clown-related threats made on social media led one school in Prince George's County to close yesterday.
School security has spent countless hours investigating these reports, and
just yesterday, police in Fresno made an arrest after threats were made to multiple schools by someone posting as a clown online.
Bakersfield Police is investigating reports of threats posted on social media by people in clown costumes.
They're posting officers at every school today just to ensure that there are no issues.
Metal poking through their bodies, strange designs on every limb. that when there's a painful hot ash, it makes me wanna sin. Medusa hair is flying round underneath the light so dim. Makes me wonder, makes me ask, what world am I in? Hey, hey, it's Halloween. Oh no, the things I've seen. Hey, hey, it's Halloween. Oh no, I'm gonna scream. Ah!
And I did see some of these reports coming out here and there over the last couple of weeks, but I pretty much shrugged it off and rolled my eyes. It's another hoax, or it's a viral movie campaign gone wrong, or something like that. But now it's gotten to the point that sightings are in 10 states, people have been threatened, kids chased from bus stops, or women chased into their homes by creepy clowns.
Sorry, I'm up.
Hi, I just got home from work and got out of my car, and I have heard so much about this, I didn't even know this was actually true, but I just got chased by a clown up into my door of my apartment.
Okay, where are you?
A woman was attacked by a clown, and a kid was even stabbed to death by a guy in a clown mask.
According to Fox 43, this clown fatally stabbed 16-year-old Christian Torres.
So, this is becoming a pretty serious situation. And there was even a story I saw where a woman was just out walking her dog and a creepy guy in a white and red clown suit stepped out from behind a tree and just was eerily, silently watching her. That kind of creepy, just creepy clowns watching people. It's, I mean, of all the things that you would think would happen in real life, that's probably not one of the things that you would have on your list of things you would have seen this year. And other than several hoax threats against schools that are usually by school kids at the schools, the creepiest clown sightings, the ones involving threats like clowns trying to lure kids into the woods in South Carolina.
There have been several reports of suspicious characters dressed like clowns, white face paint and all, flashing green lasers and enticing kids with large amounts of money.
It scares me.
Or a clown carrying a machete and threatening people with it in Mississippi. Or the woman who was chased into her house in Ohio and called 911. Or the other woman in Ohio who was attacked by a man in a clown suit. Or the kid in Pennsylvania, the 10th grader who was stabbed.
The capers draw their wraps around, you know they only come out at night. You only see their fanged smile and it gives you quite a fright. Better wear your garlic necklace and watch out for that bite. They're only wearing black until there's a color not so bright. Hey, hey, it's Halloween. Oh no, the things I've seen. Hey, hey, it's Halloween. Oh no, I'm gonna scream.
And the dozens, if not hundreds by now, of other 911 calls across the country from Virginia to Florida. All of these witnesses seeing these creepy clowns doing all this stuff. None of the creepy clowns, the ones that have not been proven to be hoaxes by little kids, just or mainly just threats on Facebook, none of the creepy clowns have been apprehended by police. Sightings continue to occur on a daily basis, and today it's gotten to the point that a school near me was actually put on lockdown after a clown sighting. I'm not kidding. I wish I was.
A nationwide scare has made its way to Central Texas. All across the country, police are investigating reports of creepy clowns threatening people, schools, and businesses. Today, several schools in our area received similar threats.
But I'm not. Do you know how I know that? Is it because I just keep track of creepy clown sightings in my area? No, because I don't have cable in my house and I don't watch television. The reason I know is because after this happened, the school in our area sent out a robotic call to our town, warning us all about clowns.
He is aware of the internet hoax involving threats against schools by people dressed as clowns. At this time, the police department has not received any specific credible threat nor any actual clown sightings, but we continue to be vigilant and monitor the issue. We especially want to thank all of you for being diligent and reporting activity that you find suspicious. If you have information or need to report something, please call 911.
What the actual f***, okay? I recorded it because I wanted to be able to prove to someone later that I actually heard that and it wasn't just in my mind and I'm losing my sanity.
All of this cannot compete with the strange world that we're in. Madmen, werewolves, liars, thieves grabbing everything they can. Vampires suck blood from our earth, you know they pump the price again. They won't come out in solar light, and they're not the friends of wind. Hey, hey, it's Halloween. Oh no, the things I've seen. Hey, hey, it's Halloween. Oh no, I'm gonna scream.
So if this was a viral movie campaign, it's gone bad now. The thing is getting such bad press, people are actually getting hurt, someone died. It's gone off the tracks. I mean, we're talking huge civil lawsuits at this point. If you're the movie behind this, I don't know that they would let this go this long without coming out and saying this is all a hoax. I mean, are they all just copycats? That was another thing that someone said, this is all just copycat hoaxes. But that doesn't really make sense either. I mean, how many things happen that people just copycat? You know, even Columbine, they said there's some school shootings that were copycatted. There was a few, but you're talking about dozens of sightings now, if not over 100, multiple states across the country.
You can now find a clown sighting in almost every city.
Witnesses everywhere. There's something else that's going on here. There's a coordination that's being suggested by this. But again, clowns, I mean, why clowns? I mean, everyone's creeped out by clowns. I mean, there's something to clowns that's very fundamental, because they've done studies and they've found that children universally hate clowns. Why do we even have clowns, honestly, when so many kids hate them? Specifically, if you were an 80s kid like me, or you were born in the 70s when serial killer John Wayne Gacy, he was daylighting as a clown called Pogo, but he also was found guilty of sexually assaulting and murdering more than 35 young men in the Chicago area. There were all those movies that came out in the time period, things like Killer Clowns from Outer Space and Poltergeist and Stephen King's It and John Carpenter's Halloween with the Mike Myers. He did that creepy thing where he just appeared and stood there and stared silently at people. That kind of thing. We've been programmed to really be afraid of creepy clowns. Not just clowns in general, but creepy, staring, silent, creepy clowns. I mean, that's almost become like an archaic symbol of scary. I think most of us could agree at this point that not just clowns, but creepy clowns have become a universal symbol of fear. I mean, it's much scary clowns are scarier than, in my opinion, werewolves or vampires or mummies or any Frankenstein's monster or any of that. Creepy clowns, I mean, that's way up the list. What does any of this have to do with AI, you're probably asking at this point, and I would almost be asking myself the same thing, but I feel like this clown thing is a psyop. I feel like it's an experiment. It makes the most sense to me as an explanation of what could be behind such a strangely coordinated thing. I'm just speculating, of course, but I mean, we're just having a conversation here after all, but the widespread nature of this bizarre threat of creepy clowns everywhere, to the point that schools are calling up residents in towns and forewarning them to be vigilant of creepy clowns in the area and to call cops if they see one, it just seems like some kind of test. What are they trying to gauge with that? I don't know. Public reaction? How widespread the reaction is? How many people see something and say something? How does law enforcement or the school react to it? I mean, it's almost like they're running a giant civil defense exercise without telling everyone it's a civil defense exercise. Or creepier still, our fear. Maybe they're testing that out. I don't know, you start going down that road, it just gets creepier and creepier, and it isn't even because of the clowns anymore.
This is scary.
So, creepy clown sightings coming in on a daily basis in random cities and towns across the country.
People have spotted clowns in Blaine, Plymouth, Columbia Heights, Woodbury, Richfield, St. Paul Park, Shakopee, and Hawkins.
And I think what's happening is just too big to be explained away by some giant copycat hoax. I wonder if ultimately they're not calibrating their AI based on us.
They are filling your social media feed. Creepy clown sightings.
Clown sighting in almost every city.
Chased by a clown.
This is scary.
We know they're testing artificial intelligence on the public. That's admitted. So, are the creepy clowns another experiment?
Cool creatures that I will meet tonight. Ghosts and goblins and witches roaming the streets in moonlight. Bowls of candy and goodies delicious and waiting in store. The sound of cute little footsteps as they approach my front door. Letting the children inside to drink beers. Razor blades hidden in three musketeers. Screams from the basement of kids begging to be set free. That's what Halloween means to me. Tightening the clamps that are holding their little heads so tight. Putting my lips to their ears as I whisper, please, don't fight. I promise to let you go home if you swear not to tell a soul. Well, I'll just untie these. I'm kidding. Now where is my hacksaw? Let's rock and roll. A pinch of your brother, a teaspoon of you, with the head of Carson would make a good stew. I'd give you a taste, but your tongue's in the stew. Irony, that's what Halloween means to me. Trick or treat, smell.
Jerry Carter, and I study food sharing relationships in vampire bats. Vampire bats are small neotropical bats. They weigh about 30 grams, and they drink nothing but blood. The legend of the vampire actually came first before the bat was discovered by Europeans. So the bat is actually named after the monster, not the other way around. One idea about vampire bats that's very common, especially in Latin America, is that most bats are vampire bats, and that's certainly not true. There are only 3 species of vampire bats, and there are roughly 1,300 species of bats. The common vampire bat usually feeds on mammals and livestock. The white-winged vampire bat will often climb along the underside of a branch to feed on the toes of a bird. And the hairy-legged vampire bat will actually land on a bird like a chicken and hide in the feathers. So it's like a giant tick. Vampire bats have these razor-sharp teeth that they use to make a small cut, and then they lick the wound, and they have an anticoagulant in their saliva, which keeps the blood flowing. And they'll take about a tablespoon of blood, and if they're successful, then the animal is none the wiser, never finds out that the bat was there until the next morning, maybe. And one of the interesting things about the biology of vampire bats is that they're very susceptible to starvation, so they don't put on fat, they don't store energy, and they can starve if they miss more than 2 meals. But other bats in their roosts will often regurgitate a portion of their blood meals to feed them. So you can fast an individual, and another individual will go and save that individual's life, essentially. And that's one of the things that makes the vampire case so interesting in terms of an example of cooperation in nature. These vampire bats, they're like these alien life forms, and yet there are so many things that they do that seem very convergent with what people do, with what primates do. Vampire bats do things like they groom each other. They seem to have these friendship-like relationships, and yet everything else about them is so strange. I don't think people should be scared of vampire bats, even within bats. I think vampire bats are probably the most hated and feared of all the bats. But I think the more you learn about vampire bats, the more you realize just how incredible they are.
Catch less Z's, more F-bombs. Invaders from the north brought a body in the trunk and four cold eyes, ushering a Jonestown flood. Two known, two dumbstruck. Plain clothes, sputter in a strange home. Spine chilly cluster to un-up. Sup, sup, Austin, I know a little magic. No check bag, show up with the most baggage. Fresh hell, dragging old hell up from old rabbits who mangle emotion in gross patterns, no carrots. Only rumors of a bridge that flicker with black scallops and float pine out a bathtub of crass maggots. Yes! 1.5 million, a number undermining how they duck and dive different. I was waiting for an hour when I maybe saw six. Some thought it was a bust, I thought it was the ish.
Let's go watch videos and hung out with his friends. I hugged his mama and it's clear to me this kid's the Minnesota Dalai Lama. And a llama twists his tongue to create a perfect rhyme with her freestyle to preconceived a spits that is shot at your mind. And your mind's rind peels back, revealing every dead friend on the back of a little black bat. So you stand and you wait at the top of the bridge. Only six fly out, then return to where they hid. So you wait and you wait and you never wanna leave, cause 1.5 million bats is what you need to see to grieve. 1.5 million bats is what you think you need, but six is enough to receive a little peace, cause every little bit counts in times of death and disorder. You look for shooting stars in the reflection of the water, and you open the gifts that you didn't expect on the birthdays of the dead friends that are stuck in your head, like love and hugs and songs and rage and the keys that you needed to unlock your heart's cage, the ability to put the pen back to the page, the heat beneath your feet to propel you on stage, the beat that completes your fish these days. Yeah, the beat that completes your fish these days.
Pickling his demons with a prematurely darnailed. Never played taps on a short scale. Played dream wars with coffins and chalkboard nails. Sore thumb, Ayo played a corner of the salt lick. Chaos set up people you are meeting, know what loss is. 20 and I'm on a patio with forceps, wig split, sorting what amounts to little warheads. Gotta stop, tell me about your homie. The quote that would open a can of bogeys in the form of stolen Roman candle stories. And wild youth clipped from a tether, plus my alive friends are even deader.
There's a little folk singer who has run out of chords, like a big bad lion who has lost its roar. Coming in like a lamb chop, out like a lion. Shame I got Gunther Gable Williams trying to tame my brain with a flick of the wrist and a crack of the whip. I said, if that's all you got, you ain't got fish. Cause for free birds like me, the possibilities are endless. Try to put me in a box, I will be relentless in my pursuit of lots of different kinds of things. You can clip my toenails, but you can't clip my wings.
Bring him to the bridge. If the colony is hiding, we will lift him on the six. Knife in the road, scalp in his mitten. Glass house, decal of Calvin. Piss on a proud bougie at a foul cow. Zip cow system, triple crown clip, never trickle down breadcrumbs. Goof is over gallon, mill about head shrunk. Thread a symphony, a krillin, killer clown, red rum, wretch. If you ever woke up feeling future proof, precious brothers in effect and rooting for the future you. Speaking of the future us, Twin City morning, broke a wiper on a rental, trying to grin away the gory. Wait, new game, smuggle bats on a plane. Wait, newer game, tie the whole bridge to its frame. I will drag these bricks over Lake and Law, shake 1.5 out over St. Paul. Now when poetry and mathematics get involved, any total and a quarter more a draw. Don't count ish. First sign of leathery wings. You thought I'm double horns up, yelling heavenly things.
See, I started this life as a nappy buckwheat flapjack, flipping on the shiny white backs of the backpack. A princess, a jock, a brain, a freak. No, I'm a meek rebel, I'm a little of each. And I'm not ashamed of all the different parts of me. And I like cross-pollinating the communities, because divided, we're cool, but together we conquer like monsters and grouches and humans and honkers. If you're close to my age, then you were raised on the street with a lick of meat, fun dip in front of your TV. And our generation's gotta do it differently, cause we got new ideas and new abilities. Is that an old-fashioned funeral? Ear change the station. I'd rather tune in for a life celebration. Say goodbye with dance parties and say goodbye with shows, cause that somber ash ish, it's not the way I wanna go. Put your hands in the air, feel your dead friend's presence, wrapping unwrap, have no resentments. With our hoods on our heads, we are up on the bridge and we're summoning the bats so we can live. With our hoods on our heads, we are up on the bridge and we're summoning the bats so we can live.
I was smiling. I was grinning from ear to ear because I was so thankful, because living in the hospital, you get to appreciate, and if you're smart, you learn love, patience, tolerance, and understanding, because there's so many angry people in the world.
But after his operation, Bill says he started acting in strange new ways.
Well, the first thing that really shocked me was that day driving to work. I usually listen to classic hard rock, Led Zeppelin, things like that. Don't ask me why, but that morning I flipped it to like a jazz station. And I'm driving to work and I hear this song. And it was Sade, The Kiss of Life. And I started crying and it was like butter going through a knife. And I usually don't cry. It takes a lot to make me cry. And here I was, like freaking out.
Bill learned later that his heart's donor, Brady Michaels, was also a jazz aficionado. According to Bill, the transplant didn't just change his musical tastes, it also changed his vocabulary.
And it's really funny. I can tell you, as a cutthroat businessman, the surfer lingo and dude did not fit into my character.
He also found he was copying Michaels' taste for healthy food.
He was a health nut. He was very big on salads. In the old days, if there weren't French fries, if there wasn't a steak or a lobster tail or something fried, it wasn't going to happen. Now, once in a while, as a treat, I'll have something like that. But I actually love salads.
Most astonishingly, Bill's new heart transformed him from an overweight couch potato into a physical fitness freak, just like Brady Michaels. Bill believes that in taking Brady Michaels' heart, he has taken some of Michaels' personality.
I'm living with a part of him that he's blessed me. And with that blessing has come some ideas and thoughts and characteristics that have kind of melded and become a part of my everyday life.
Wow, this is all very weird. I told you it was weird. The guy gets a heart transplanted, and he believes he got a bonus. He got the donor's
personality too. And it's more than the heart. Think about it. There are thousands of other transplants done each year. Lungs, kidneys, livers. If this guy is right, are those people getting their donors' personalities as well? Is this even possible?
Bill Wall's remarkable story suggests something that common sense says cannot be. Could our organs really store the essence of our being? Can one person's body assimilate the personality of someone long since dead? Psychology professor Dr. Gary Schwartz thinks so.
If all tissues could store information and energy, then if a tissue was removed from one person and was surgically placed in another, there would be a transplant not only of the matter, but of the memory as well.
Schwartz has researched the transfer of memory for 30 years and has tracked down some 70 cases of similar donor stories.
I have seen too many cases of uncanny and accurate parallels for me to question whether there's a phenomenon here.
In 1988, Claire Sylvia received the heart and lungs of a young man who died in a motorcycle accident. After the operation, she develops a new taste for beer, green peppers, and chicken nuggets, things her former self would never have eaten. The donor's parents tell her that their son, Tim, loved nothing more than beer and green peppers, and chillingly, on the night Tim died, he was riding his motorcycle with a box of chicken nuggets in his pocket.
There are examples from Bill's case which indicate the specificity above and beyond simple changes in diet or exercise, which a lot of people might do because they had a heart transplant.
Can't these personality changes be explained as a reaction to a brush with death, or even as side effects of the powerful anti-rejection drugs used after transplant surgery?
The first thing we want to entertain are conventional explanations like side effects of the drugs, stress of the surgery, or just changes in philosophy of life.
They're given drugs and medication to tame down their immune system, and most of the side effects and toxicity come from these immunosuppressant drugs that reduce the response of the body to the new organ.
A side effect of a steroid might change people's anxiety level, or it might change maybe a certain food preference, but it's going to be random in relationship to the preferences and personality of the donor.
I don't think the anti-rejection drugs, as toxic as they may be, could explain the specific information that gets transferred. That would have to be pure luck or some actual mechanism of transference from the donor to the recipient.
So it appears to be too much of a coincidence to be the drugs. Dr. Stuart Hameroff has a radical theory that suggests something almost beyond belief. Can the human heart actually store our memories?
It's not only the brain that can store memory. We have muscle memory. We learn to play tennis, and there's information stored in the nerves that control the muscles. And the heart has a lot of neurons. Outside of the brain, that's one of the largest collections of neurons in the body. The nodes that control the beating of the heart and the conduction and the synchrony of the muscles, so the heart beats together synchronously, are fairly a substantial complex of neurons.
Neurons are specialized cells that transmit information via electrical impulses and chemical signals throughout the body's nervous system. The information they carry allows us to move, think, learn, and feel. Most neuroscientists believe that long-term memories are stored exclusively by neurons in the brain. Dr. Hameroff has a more radical theory. He believes memories can also be stored by neurons in other parts of the body, within a cellular structure called a microtubule.
Microtubules seem to be the most likely site for memory to be housed, because we know that in Alzheimer's disease, where you lose memory, it's the microtubules in the brain neurons that fall apart. So there's a number of avenues of evidence that lead to the fact that the microtubules are housing and storing memory. But it would be focused and more prevalent in parts of the body that have the most neurons, the most microtubules, namely the brain and the big nervous ganglia like the heart.
If Dr. Hameroff is right, memories can be stored by microtubules in the brain, the heart, and the spinal cord, or anywhere else there are neurons. This could explain why, when Bill Wall got a heart transplant, he got a memory transplant too.
Dr. Hamerov came to his theory of memory initially by studying neurons and anesthesia and then extending that to other organs, particularly the heart. So he's looking at a very special case of how a particular component of a cell can have memory. And I wouldn't disagree with that.
Throughout human history, poets and philosophers have invested the heart with powers and meaning beyond that of a simple organ. In Papua New Guinea, victorious warrior tribes would consume the hearts of the vanquished to absorb their qualities. In the arts, the heart has always been seen as the source of all love and passion. Who could refrain that had a heart to love, and in that heart, courage to make love known? That's Shakespeare. The heart is central to our culture, and it is our own center. From the heart, everything flows. Now, some scientists believe the heart literally has a mind of its own. But could memory and intelligence be found in more than our hearts and heads? Could it be coursing through our whole bodies?
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
We all have experiences that shake our faith. There are times where we have questions for God's plan relative to us. But that's precisely when we should remember Christ's own doubts and eventually his own triumph. Jesus told us as much in the book of John when he said, "In this world you will have trouble.
Now, go find the others.com.
We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.